Stories stir the soul.
Stories reveal.
And stories heal.
In this podcast, we will give you an inside look at someone who's had a life-changing breakthrough.
Real people, real stories with real breakthroughs. As a health and wellness expert and coach, and Todd as a men's mentor,
we've seen firsthand what God can do when it comes to a breakthrough. So lean in, listen well. This could be your biggest breakthrough.
He left me for 10 days.
Yep, I did.
Yes, he did.
How'd you do?
I actually did okay.
What? I leave you for 10 days and you do okay? Weren't you lonely?
Well, I was in the beginning. I have to admit.
Were you a little lonely?
I was a little lonely.
Did you miss me?
I missed you a lot.
Did you learn anything while we were separated?
Oh, yes, I did. Did you?
I actually did.
Yeah.
Because of where I was during this 10-day separation.
So welcome to Your Biggest Breakthrough. I'm Todd. Oh, no, I'm Wendy Pett.
Oh, my goodness. You are so confused. You see what happens when you spend too much time alone is you get all confused.
Oh, my gosh. How could I just say I'm Todd?
I have no idea. That is so great. And I'm Wendy Pett. Oh, that's not how you talk. All right. So it's Todd and Wendy here, and it is your biggest breakthrough.
Yeah, you actually are on the right podcast.
Yeah. And Wendy and I are going to talk about some things today that may be of interest to you. We hope it is of interest to you.
Or it may be a little disturbing.
No, it could be very disturbing. That's true. So let's just give a little background.
Yeah.
Just a little teaser. The things that we want to share with you today, we believe are applicable to everyday living. And that there are some things that we're going to talk about today, sort of lessons that were learned that hopefully you can implement into your own life.
Yes. And it's not to leave your wife.
No.
Nope. Not
unless,
even for 10 days, unless.
You want to do what I did. And that was.
What was that?
So I headed off to a monastery for 10 days.
It was supposed to be 13. Let's get real. You cut it short.
It's true. Here's what happened is I made a commitment to go somewhere between 10 to 13 days. I don't know why 13. I guess just because it's short of 14 and it sounds better. But I made the commitment, I'll go at least 10 days and hopefully for 13 days. Well, it turned out to be 10 days and I was in agony, but we'll talk more about that.
Yes.
I went to a Benedictine monastery.
Yes. So, yeah. But first of all, why? Why did you even have this drive and desire to go to this monastery?
I needed to get away from you for 10 days.
Hallelujah.
What better place than a monastery? I wanted to go find out what it's like to spend extended time alone with primarily just yourself and
robe and with a shaved head.
No, I didn't have that, unfortunately. But no, I wanted to find out what would surface. And honestly, originally I thought I'm going to go away to this monastery and I'm going to start writing a book, another book.
Right.
There's something
that you actually told me about this time.
Yeah.
You were going to,
I was telling
you about the last book you didn't tell me about. Right.
But that didn't happen. I went wide open to see, so God, what do you have in all of this? And I could not seem to get to the place of writing this book or even starting to write the book. I did some other things. I did some journaling and I did all kinds of other things. They weren't on an agenda of any kind.
Yeah.
Wasn't planning on it. So can I just, I got to give a little context.
Yeah, give some context.
So this is the St. John's Abbey Monastery. It's part of St. John's University in St. Cloud, Minnesota. And I've been familiar with that school. In fact, years and years ago, my brother and I did a little triathlon on the campus. We had to swim across the lake and back, run a 10K in the woods, and then bike 25 miles on the country road. So I had some familiarity, but it'd been a long time.
And you're familiar with the college.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, they're a great school. It's a Catholic college, and they are they have a lot of tradition. They were founded in 1856 by the Benedictines who came to Minnesota and established this place of education. So, make a long story short, I'd done a little research. You're not even aware of this. I checked out a number of monasteries throughout the country.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No. Because I didn't want to tell you till the last minute, like it was in Pennsylvania or something. But turned out,
like,
this one's in our backyard. It's like 100 miles away. So this I can do. Just, I thought, let's be at least nearby in case Wendy goes crazy and needs me home.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm within driving distance. So,
you know, here's one thing I'll say is that interesting people do interesting things. And so you're interesting. That's good.
Well, you and I both love adventure.
The most interesting man in the world.
I'm not so sure about that. What's the, no, we don't want to talk about that ad.
Yeah.
But I went, again, at first thinking maybe I'll write a book, but then on the way I thought, I'm just, God, whatever you want, I'm just going to open up myself and see what happens over this period of time. And what were you thinking about when I first told you I'm going to the monastery?
I really didn't quite understand, why do you need to go away to a monastery to write a book? And I thought, oh my goodness, he's flipped out again. He's going.
I've done that a few times.
Yeah, he's gone over on the deep end here. So I just thought, okay, whatever, let him have this experience, and who knows how God will meet him there. And so I thought it was cool. I just thought, wow, really, 13 days? Do you really need that? And you know, you can write that book here at home. I can be very quiet. I know I could. So you can get it done. But I know sometimes you need to go somewhere to have solitude and just some inspiration and that kind of thing. But and just silence, right?
Right.
And so you experienced silence.
I experienced silence.
How was that for you?
It was deafening.
Right.
I'm going to explain that. In fact, I jotted down while I was there some of the lessons I was learning each day. Mm-hmm. And so I've summarized them into 10 lessons in the 10 days I was at the monastery.
Okay.
So I thought, maybe if we discuss these lessons that I learned, there's something that you can take away in your life to at least consider implementing or changing, or
so they could be
being challenged by
breakthrough opportunities.
Well, they were for me.
Yeah.
Okay,
well, let's talk about that.
All right, lesson number one was I had to come to the conclusion very quickly on that first day when I entered into the little room with a little bed.
And, like what? Like a dormitory?
It was kind of like a dormitory. Okay. I was in the Abbey guest house. So the monks, the Benedictine monks are in Benedictine monks. They're in their residence, which is next door in a separate building. And unfortunately, I couldn't stay directly with them. That probably was a smart thing on their part. But the Abbey guest house is beautiful. I had a wonderful view of the lake behind the monastery, and just a simple little room with a bathroom and a desk and a chair and a bed. And when I walked in, one of the first things that hit me is that sometimes the best use of your time is spent by simply being quiet and listening and thinking and praying and resting. Mm. And you notice I said that slowly because it took me a while to really absorb that. When I walked in that room and I put my stuff down, I had to immediately relinquish my need to always have to know what I'm going to do, to have an agenda.
Because you're you like to always be on the move.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I also believe that, you know, we have to treat our time like an entrustment from God and make the best use of it. Well, unfortunately, most of us think the best use of our time is
doing stuff. Right.
What do you got on your to-do list there? What's on? And it's knocking these things off. And I had to come to that surrendering point of saying, okay, no. The best use of my time can actually be spent by being quiet and listening and thinking and praying and resting.
Okay. So I know you, and the majority of people have a hard time, you know, getting into that space. Yeah. So how long did it really take to kind of get settled in and decompress and get into that space of quiet?
Well, I would say in the 10 days there, when I was packing up on the
day 10th, eight,
on the 10th day, I was finally starting to get there. It took me a good 5 days. It was very challenging. But I took it a day at a time, which I know is a cliche, but that in reality is when you're in a place like that, you don't know what to expect. So you take it one day at a time. So,
I kind of can relate a little bit because I did a hermitage kind of situation.
You
up
did.
In Isanti.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was just
Isanti, Minnesota.
Yes. Yes. And it was only for 3 days, but I had a whole big agenda, all these books with me and all the things I was going to do. And I didn't do any of it. And God had a different plan. It was really just sit and be still. And it was tough to do, but the silence, I do remember that silence being deafening. So let's talk a little bit about that, because you even talked about a noise that was going on that was driving you nuts, even though it was silence. Yeah. You start to notice other little hums and.
Well, there was something in the heating system where there was this this constant, well, it wasn't constant, but it was sporadic, but it was evident that it was making noise, not a loud noise, just off in the sort of like off in the distance, kind of like a and I didn't know, was this designed by the monks as sort of like Chinese water torture? Are they trying to break me?
Yeah, right.
First night was horrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrible. But the thing about silence is, and this is the second lesson that I learned, and that is at first silence can be like a deafening distraction.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because if you're not used to silence, you're very distracted. I was distracted by it being so quiet.
Yeah.
I didn't like that at all. I'm used to stimulus. Maybe you are too.
I think almost everyone is used to some sort of stimulus, whether it's having, you know, this podcast in your ears or just the TV on or the radio on, or just the hum of the refrigerator or the machine, washing machine going on. There's always some sort of noise or the little clippity clops of the paws of your dog or cat running across the floor. Right. You know what I mean? The noises. Yeah. And you get used to those. And then when there's nothing,
it can be torturous.
It's eerie.
No,
right?
It can be almost torturous. It's a preoccupation. So it took me a while to get past the reality of it's going to be very quiet.
Yeah.
Then I started taking walks in the woods because I
couldn't handle it.
No, I had to get out. I could just sit in those four walls. So
yeah. We were just talking to our friend Michelle actually, and she was talking about a room that has that is designed to be silent.
Yeah, they've done some research, testing.
Yeah, some testing, and
see what happens to humans when it's truly dead silent, there's nothing,
like nothing. And the longest anyone has ever been able to stay in that airtight silent room is 45 minutes. So imagine that.
Yeah,
because they just go crazy.
Well, I wasn't about to go crazy. So I went outside and I started taking walks.
Yeah.
And it's the third lesson that I learned. And that was long walks in the woods really can be very energizing.
I could have told you that.
Well, that's true. Let's walk it off now with Wendy. And I love walking in the woods and it is very energizing, but it's also a great place to think about what matters most and to talk with God about all of it. And I mean, so I realize I'm sort of stating the obvious here of course, you take long walks in the woods and it's a great place to talk to God. But when's the last time you did that? I mean, seriously.
Right.
The last time you intentionally went off on a walk in the woods to talk with God.
Over the weekend.
Yeah. Well, that's because we live by the woods.
That's true.
There's a lot of people who have to make it very intentional and get in the car, go drive somewhere to find a park or somewhere.
And so often God speaks to us in his playground. And so I wanted to ask you, because I don't know this answer. We haven't really dialogued about it. But did you sense that God was talking to you through his creation, his animals, the weather? Did something hit you in any kind of way?
No and yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So what happened on my walks in the woods, because I am a talker, I found myself talking to God.
Oh,
I was informing God of all sorts of matters and things that he should be doing for people and for me.
Oh, funny.
But then honestly, it was probably after about 4 or 5 days, maybe longer, that I'm having a walk in the woods again. It's energizing. It's a great place to think things through and talk with God. I'm thinking, wait a minute, I'm not talking with God. I'm talking to God.
At him or to
him. And I literally just stopped dead in my tracks and apologized to God. And I said, I want to hear what you have to say. Wow. And he flooded me immediately with all kinds of things related to my salvation. Mm. Took me right back to the beginning of when I received Christ into my life. It overwhelmed me. And I wasn't hearing words from God, but I was feeling God's heart. And I literally dropped to my knees on those leaves and I bowed my head all the way down. I'm just getting emotional thinking about it because he so overwhelmed me with the reality of his presence and his voice and the way he wanted to communicate with me. So yeah, there's a whole lot more value in being quiet and listening than just talking to God.
Yeah. And I think that is a very good lesson learned for me, for all of us and for all of us, because most of us are talkers. We go and we pray, we tell God what's going on and what we need help with.
We can inform him of everything.
I mean, we're praising him and all that too, but it's just like the be still and know and hear my still small quiet voice.
Absolutely.
And that takes just being quiet.
Now, when it comes to time to talking to God, sometimes it's very valuable and very enriching to do it with a group. And I'm talking about communal prayer. So I had a chance to join the Benedictines three times a day in their times of prayer.
Yeah. And let's talk about that, because there is a routine and a ritual in which that they do their prayer, and they had to help you.
Well, yeah. So
I went
over to the chapel, and so they meet 7 a.m., 12 noon, and 7 p.m. And they pray for 30 minutes. And it's primarily, it's chanting, it's prayers, it's singing, and it's primarily the Psalms and then some readings. And it's kind of the way it's built is on the left side sits part of the choir, if you will, of monks, the gathering. And on the right side, facing the left side, are more monks sort of forming like a choir. And so we go back and forth. It's pretty cool.
Oh, really?
In this time of communal prayer. And
we used to do that at ball games.
Yeah, no. This,
oh, okay. A little bit different.
Be completely different. So I learned that having communal prayer with others who are like-minded and have the same thing in mind can be a really, really good ritual. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of a two-edged sword for me.
Why is that?
Here's what I mean. I really liked the reverence, but I'm not crazy about the religious aspect of it. And I say that very carefully and respectfully. Because sometimes liturgy and religion and all of that can be a little monotonous, and yet there's a deep reverence to it. So there's a little confliction going on with me.
Especially being brought up Catholic.
Well, yes, right. Exactly. So I was very familiar with it. Mm-hmm. Well, not familiar with that style, but familiar with ritual. Mm-hmm. So the other thing that hit me though, is I like to read and I like to talk really fast. I like to get it done, right? Okay. But joining the monks at prayer time, reading and chanting very slowly, and in a sort of a monotone voice, it was very hard for me to do.
Right, right.
But extremely valuable. Uh-huh. So where is the lesson for you in this? Communal prayer.
For me? Are you asking rituals? Me? Or
I am. Yeah, I'm asking all of us. Yeah, is there a lesson in this for us? Because absolutely. If you're not joining the monks, what are you doing?
Well, are you going to church? Are you going to where the body of Christ is? Are you just staying at home and watching online church? Mm. Not that there's anything wrong with watching online church, but there's something very valuable about everyone coming together. Yeah. Yes, communal prayer.
Definitely. I think there's real power in that. Mm-hmm. And honestly, there's some real value in developing rituals. We don't put our faith and our trust and our love or our worship into the ritual, but we use the ritual as a means of getting our hearts aligned with God.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you find that was there anything really difficult? I know the silence was difficult, but what was difficult? Because you use a lot of technology and we both do, and we didn't really communicate much.
No.
Was that hard being away from technology?
Not a bit.
No, really?
Look, I'm going to give a true confession.
Okay.
I had no idea until I was in about day five and I'm walking in the woods and I'm really frustrated. And I say out loud, I am a bona fide addict.
Oh.
Because I became very aware I am addicted to my phone. Look, if you're on YouTube, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, who's that? Just texted you.
Check that out here. There's notifications coming up. Hold on one moment, folks. I'm addicted to my phone. I'm addicted to my computer. I'm addicted to emails primarily on my computer. I'm addicted to Google searches for everything. I'm addicted to...
Well, we need to go to DuckDuckGo.
Whatever. Okay. I just know that I'm addicted to these things. I'm addicted to life management busyness, which occupies a ton of my day. Mm-hmm. I'm even addicted to talking to people.
You're even addicted about talking about your list and getting things done.
Yes, I am. I just know that it was a very uncomfortable realization and confession I had to make. Because when I think of addicts and addictions, I usually put it in another category.
Sure. And we've had several podcasts just here recently, the last couple talking about addictions.
Well, I never put myself in that category.
Well, of course you didn't.
But I did after a few days of, I just realized, wow, I miss these things.
Yeah.
We develop a dependency on these kinds of things in our life. And I think it brings us I don't know what. What does it bring us?
Well,
satisfaction, fulfillment,
a dopamine drip.
Yeah, maybe
it messes with our chemical makeup, and we become bona fide addicts. So, all right. Well, what about the next lesson?
All right. So, the next lesson I learned. This is when I was just about losing my mind, and that's lesson number 6. That it's okay for a short period of time to have absolutely nothing to do. I mean, nothing to do. So what was tough for me is I first had to get past this belief that doing nothing is a sin because it seems to be, you know, wasting time. Because this is how I was raised pretty much. And it's okay. But you don't want to waste your time. You want to make sure, you know, that you're being a good steward of the time that God has entrusted to you. And it didn't seem to me like with nothing to do, that's a very good use of my time. And I had to go back to lesson one. But wait a minute, a good use of time is when you're resting, praying, thinking, walking in the woods and doing, I mean, basically nothing in regards to your little agenda of all the little busy things that you think you've got to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And so you begin to realize that busyness in life brings entrapments.
Yeah.
And that doing nothing brings freedom.
But boredom in the beginning, but then you realize it's freedom.
Yeah. I'm sure you got to work through that process, right? Yeah. Of recognizing you're addicted to stuff and you don't like silence and you got to learn to listen instead of always talking to God. You got to go through that whole process. But the reality is it really is okay. In fact, it's a good thing for a short period of time to have absolutely nothing to do. And I challenge you to try that. Like just for a day, no agenda, no to-dos, nothing.
Like the Sabbath would be a great day to do that. But it could be any day.
Wow, that's convicting even just you saying that, because that really is what our Sabbath should be all about.
I know.
God, I'm here for you.
I know.
All right, so that was lesson number 6. That was a tough one.
It was. And lesson number 7.
Yeah, lesson number 7 is being alone.
Did you miss me?
Yes, I did.
You did?
I really, truly missed you.
And I'm pretty really, good.
I'm pretty good about being alone. You know that from all the years of traveling and being alone and on my own and all.
And I am too. We've traveled apart and been fine.
Yeah.
But for some reason, this time we both had a longing for one another in a different way. Like we just really missed one another.
My heart goes out to people who become lonely because they are alone.
Yeah.
Now, my mother is alone, but she says, but I'm not lonely.
Right.
And she's really not. Her life is just filled up with talking with God and his presence. And I mean, she's just very content being alone because she does not experience loneliness.
But I normally am, and you normally are, but we experience being lonely.
Yeah.
And so, it helped us have a conversation about those that are really experiencing loneliness and how it's tough.
You can help.
We can have compassion for those.
We can have compassion, but we also need to take action.
Reach out.
Now, you know some people who are alone. They're either widowed or they're divorced or they're just on their own for a while or they're a young person who's pretty much at a course of
isolated
study
and
whatever it might be. You know somebody who may be struggling with that. And we're just challenging you to reach out. And something else hit me though, about, being alone and loneliness, the combination of those two. And that is when you are alone, it makes you realize how much you think about yourself.
Oh,
I did not like that.
Really?
No,
we didn't talk about this. No. Tell me about this. You were thinking about yourself a lot.
Yeah. Think about
like what you're how uncomfortable you are.
Yes. You're thinking about all that stuff.
What about me?
I thought about you once in a while, but I thought about me. Yeah, like what about me and where I'm at and what I'm learning, blah, blah, blah.
Wait a minute. I thought you missed me and you said you thought about me.
I thought more about
me
than you.
Honest.
I'm just gonna be honest with you. So here's when the reality hit me when I'm really observing my brother Benedictines. Because I've had a couple conversations. I was extraordinarily blessed to be able to interview 3 of them.
Can we talk about the one? Because that's fascinating.
We will in a moment. Okay. But I have to make this point. Observing their lives. These are saints, in my opinion, because they literally give up their lives for the Lord and for serving others. So they don't think always about themselves because they're thinking about the Lord and about others. And that's what convicted me, realizing, Todd, when you're alone like this, you spend a lot of time thinking about you.
Okay, but don't you think just like anything, it took practice for them? I don't think it was.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, that's not something you snap your fingers at. But remember, they have made a commitment to completely surrender their lives and to give themselves. And we can make that commitment and still be married and raise kids and still make a commitment. God, I belong to you and your agenda first. And I dedicate myself to serving others. So that was a big lesson for me.
Yes, that is a big lesson. It's a big lesson for me to hear that you're thinking about you more than
I'm
me.
I'm sorry. I think that's healthy.
Is it?
Well, I don't want to become overly dependent and addicted on you, to you.
So, that's a good one. Yeah. Yes, that's my way to wiggle out. All right. Okay. So what else did you learn? Well, okay. I want to talk about the interview that you did with one of the monks, because I was fascinated, and you can just give a snippet of it, but oh my goodness.
I interviewed Brother Paul Vincent. Oh, I'm sorry. Which one are we talking about? Your brother circus. Bob was the last one.
Oh, okay.
The circus.
Circus guy.
Okay. So Brother Paul Vincent. And by the way, he has agreed to be a guest on our podcast.
Oh, he did?
Yes, he did.
Oh, okay. Then don't tell the whole story.
I'm just going to give a teaser.
Yes.
How in the world, in midlife, do you go from being a circus ringmaster to a Benedictine monk?
Oh my goodness. Stay tuned. I am so excited. You did not tell me that.
Just found out the email just a couple hours ago.
Oh, that's so exciting. Okay. So stay tuned, everybody.
Yeah. All right. So I also, lesson number 8 for me was that I discovered my idea of knowing the majesty of God and serving others pales in comparison to Benedictine monks and other Catholic religious orders. And in some ways you could say, well, yeah, they got a leg up on you because they, you know, they don't get married and they don't have families and they dedicate themselves just to the Lord.
Yeah.
That's not the point I'm making. The point I'm making is that there is a level of understanding among Benedictines and other religious orders. There's an understanding of the bigness and the majesty and the awesomeness of God that makes mine really kind of pale in comparison. Mine, I was learning, it's more superficial for me, and I think for a lot of us.
Convicting, right?
Yes. Yeah. And that's honestly, that's not a good thing. And this is something we can remedy. We can stop being so trivial and superficial in our understanding of who God is. And we can get around others who have got an elevated view of the majesty of God. And I need much more of that.
Yeah. And it's fixing our eyes on him and thinking of him first and not you.
Absolutely.
Thinking
true.
So much about ourselves.
But not just thinking of him as I want to think of him.
How do you want to think of him?
Thinking of him as who he really is.
Oh, right.
And beginning to have a deeper understanding of that. And there's a way to accomplish that. I don't know exactly how to do that other than get around people who have a bigger view of God than you do, read books about it, fellowship with those who can bring you up to a higher level.
Well, don't you think that is the beauty of the ritual and the routine is because it takes you back to that space of who God really is and the reverence. And so, I mean, I wasn't brought up Catholic but we still had some routines that we did growing up in church. And there is something special about it. And do I love it? And do I think that that's what you have to do to have a great relationship with Jesus? Absolutely not. But I do think that it helps to keep that really good, solid foundation.
So right. So right. So right. In fact, this became more evident to me because of the church in the monastery. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful, beautifully designed, architecturally perfect designed for understanding the majesty of God. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that, you know, we put our attention just on the physical facade. We put our attention on God, but there's something about that sort of stimulus that just brings our heart to another place. In fact, one of the things that
the excellence of it all, right?
Yes. The excellence and the majesty and the reverence and the sacredness. So one of the practices of the monks, and I did this and I loved it, is whenever you walk, if you're going to walk in front of or pass by the crucifix, you stop and you bow.
Oh.
You just take a moment, you bow. And I started to do that. I thought at first, like, oh, this is just a ritual. But honestly, it's a reminder again, God is God.
Well, it's like when we are praying and we're on our knees praying. It's different than when we're just in our car driving and praying, you know?
That's good. You're right. There's certain practices I think that will help us put God in his rightful place. I mean, God wants to be friends. He is in that rightful
but
place.
But for us to realize it.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm just teasing. I know what
you more lessons.
Okay. Lesson nine. What you got?
Being uncomfortable in unfamiliar circumstances is extraordinarily tough.
Yes.
And you know what I'm talking about. Maybe that for you is a place at work. Maybe there's something going on in your home, but it's uncomfortable and there's some unfamiliar circumstances that you've found yourself in and you realize, I don't like this.
Or maybe it's familiar circumstances and they're still uncomfortable, like with family or with certain friends or just relationship stuff that it's tough. And you know?
Yeah. Well, for me, being up there in this environment,
I was actually really proud of you for doing that, by the way, because it isn't something you would normally do.
No. And it required discipline to keep doing it.
Yeah.
It just did because I was uncomfortable. It was unfamiliar. I wanted to come home. This was tough. It's like, I didn't like it. And so at first, you know, the unfamiliar brings curiosity. And even though it's a little uncomfortable, you're okay because you're kind of curious about it. And then it seems to me, for me, it starts to lead to some doubts. Like, I'm not so sure this is a good idea. I'm not so sure that I'm gonna. And then after the doubts, you're forced to make a decision. That's exactly where I came to. You're going to make a decision. Either you're going to stick with this or you're going to bail.
Right.
So whatever uncomfortable, unfamiliar circumstance you're in right now, friend, I'm just saying you got a choice.
Yeah. You're going to stick it out.
Stick it out and learn a lot and grow deeper, or you can bail.
Yeah. I mean, you did bail.
What do you mean?
You did come home early.
10 days is a long time. I set a limit of 10 days.
I'm just teasing. I'm amazed that you did 10 days.
Minimum of 10.
Yeah.
Maximum of 13. But you know what?
What did you learn by day 10?
By day 10, here's what I learned. Monastic life is not for me. And
well, that's good news.
And that's okay.
Yeah, that is okay.
it's not for me.
But I think what it did is it confirmed Todd's longing and all the years of thinking you should have been a priest, and yet you weren't supposed to be a priest, or you wouldn't be where you are with me today, and that kind of thing. But just that curiosity and knowing that you had that desire it helped to solidify that and to see that
I was able to appreciate the way that God made me and what he made me for.
Yeah.
And I mean,
he made you for me.
Well, and for the 12 grandkids that are in existence as well.
Well, hello.
And all of the life experiences that I went through and the bouncing off the walls and the falling into pits and all the lessons I had to learn along the way, which I probably would have been sheltered from, you know, tucked away in a monastery. And it's not that they're not, I mean, listen, these guys are not what the perception is. A lot of people think, oh, monastic life, well, they're just pretty much sitting around praying and meditating and chanting, right?
Isn't they're not really helping the community a lot, right?
Listen, these guys work hard. And that's what I found out in my interviews, is they've all got jobs, they all work hard, and they do have these disciplines of taking time out to pray and to minister, and they are on the move.
Yeah.
In the two interviews that I did, I was fortunate enough to actually get time scheduled from them because they are that busy. And I found out a lot of really great things about their lives and Benedictine monks in general. And somehow I've got to find a way to share those interviews.
Well, we may have to do a part two.
Yeah.
And share a little bit
play
of those interviews. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. We'll see. You guys let us know. Yeah. Would you like to hear those? And so you've got some bonus lessons.
I'll just do these real quick. A couple because it hit
and
me
then
too.
We'll wrap it up.
Yeah.
But this is interesting.
This I got from the Benedictines, watching them and listening to them and interviewing them. And here it is. Think before you speak. Wow. In fact, talk less.
Wow. I need to work on all that.
I hate that one, but that's so true. When I'd ask certain questions, and I had some doozies that I asked these guys, rather than just blurt out an answer and fill up space spinning their wheels talking, I was amazed, especially Brother Cyril. When he had a tough question, he would look aside and think. He was very comfortable being quiet thinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I didn't interrupt them. And I promise you, one of those answers that he was thinking about took at least 2 minutes. Like, I'm climbing out of my skin thinking, do I help him along? Do I give him multiple choice? Do I? And then he, listen, he gave me an answer that was so stinking profound.
Wow.
Why? Because he was thinking before he was just speaking.
You're real so methodical.
That's important for me. It's important for all of us. Boy. And the last lesson I learned, and this is just a general, kind of assumption that I made based upon my experience, and that is this. It's not an assumption. It's a reality. It's a truth. Benedictine monks in this community are genuinely humble and kind. Mm. I was so grateful and impressed by how genuine their humility was. They don't like try to be humble.
They just are.
They're just humble.
Yeah.
And I think they're humble because they spend a lot of time in God's presence and serving others. And they live in a community where you better learn to deal with interpersonal relationship issues.
Right.
And they do.
Yeah, because they have that probably within the community there. I mean, personalities are personalities, right? Yeah.
One of the brothers shared with me that's probably his biggest challenge, but it's a good one for him.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, but here's the really cool thing about the Benedictine monks and their humility and their kindness, and that is this. That is a culture that can be duplicated in your home and in your workplace wherever you go. You literally can, if you will align yourself with like-minded people, you can develop a culture of humility and kindness, and what a great place to be able to function within.
Yeah, to honor one another in that way. That's beautiful. I love that. Well done, Todd.
Sam,
guess where I'm going for 10 days.
Not there. you're going to go over to St. Benedict's, which is run by the nuns.
I don't know. I'm going to Fiji. For 10 days, what? I have to do some research.
Oh, you're not going anywhere, woman. You're staying right here. Get in that kitchen and kick me up a meal, honey.
I cannot believe you just said that.
That's the stereotype, and I'm just speaking on behalf of those stereotypes.
Are you sure you learned something while you're there?
I'm still learning. No, I didn't say learn. I'm saying I'm learning.
Remember this bonus one, to think before you speak.
Oh, blew that one already.
Hey, friend, we are so glad you joined us today. We hope you found this interesting, also entertaining, but also maybe that these lessons that Todd learned, that you could apply them to your life and make your life and those around you better. And hey, stay tuned, because you do not want to miss the episode that will be coming up soon. Can't tell you when, but soon, in the weeks ahead, with this incredible monk that has an incredible story. So God bless you. And thanks for tuning in to Your Biggest Breakthrough.
Yeah, thanks for listening.